Great. So this is really three of three parts. We've already gone through the majority of Brendan's book on high performance habits. I hope you've learned a lot. It is an absolute blessing to me. In fact, I'm looking at putting together actually a course on what he's discussed in here because I think the information is invaluable, and it really is about structuring our life in different ways, taking on new attitudes, putting, you know, checks and balances every day of our life so that we truly can become those high-performance people. You want high-performance results, you have to develop high-performance habits, right? So, and this is research he's done. I mean, he's interviewed and worked with hundreds of CEOs and companies all across the country and the world. He's ranking right up there. I talked to somebody about him the other day, and they said, well, he's climbing up the ladder to be really close to Tony Robbins in terms of self-development, but he's more directed at leadership skills and other things. He does a lot more corporate coaching than Tony Robbins does, but it's huge. His name is becoming like a common word like Tony Robbins. So really cool. I'm excited about it because I've enjoyed his book so much. And maybe part of it is too because I spent a chunk of my life in corporate America at the upper echelon levels, so this all relates really, you know, in a kind of an interesting way for me. But anyway, so he talks about part three of three parts is how do you sustain success? And some of us are still searching for success and always searching for more success because that should be a goal of all of us. But sustaining success. So he talks about avoiding three traps. And that's for us as well as we build our Manatech businesses, we want to avoid traps that might occur for us. The first one he talks about, beware of superiority. I like the quote from Shakespeare. The fault, dear Brutus, is not in our stars, but in ourselves. So it's about looking at who we are. Our faults are internal. And the concept of superiority is like, you know, sometimes CEOs and maybe you even in your Manatech business are looking at, boy, you know, Mary Jo, it gets a little lonely at the top of my organization. And that should never, ever happen to us. Because we just create that. You know, when people complain about it, you've created your own environment. You don't want to, you know, you get so full of yourself and you get so prideful and you get, maybe it, even for some, it's out of fear. They fear, they don't want people to undercut them or they have fear that somebody might show up better. So they kind of separate themselves out. You know, sometimes, and he said, I liked it, that sometimes leaders get so good they forget what made them successful. And I love that from my perspective because I look at myself in Manatech and I'm always reading. You all know how much I put into, you know, bettering myself every day of my life. I probably read 2-3 books a month at minimum. And it's always about, you know, how can I pour into myself and just allow myself to be better? And the idea is that I never forget what made me successful. And one of the most empowering things for me is remembering how I failed miserably in this business the first 6 months that I did it. And that just allows me to come from a humble spirit because it isn't an easy business. It's not like you jump in and you just do it right out of the box, especially for those of us that haven't been trained in many of the, you know, methods of communication and communication skills and all those things. So it's we never want to forget what made us successful. And anti-practice is what derails you is thinking you're better than others, more important, more capable, and you're not. You just are who you are, right? So don't start tooting your own horn and pounding on your own chest. That doesn't get you anywhere, except it's a lose-lose. So it's about that humility and that approach that everybody matters. You know, and it's kind of like that saying, everybody puts their pants on the same way. Exactly. That's what it applies to. So what doesn't derail leaders, fear, he looked at what are things that don't derail leaders. Sometimes people use these as excuses about what derails you as a leader, fear. Fear was not. Leaders see fear and they do it anyway. It's kind of like Susan Jeffers' book, Feel the Fear and Do It Anyway. Fear actually feeds a lot of leaders. It's a mechanism because it's another hill to overcome. You know, when you feel that fear, you go, I feel it and I'm going to go plow right through it. It's an attitude. competence was not, of course, because every time when you get into leadership roles, you just continue to increase your competency level. And so it's not about a lack of competence. Other people, leaders don't point fingers at other people and blame. They don't play the blame game. Creativity, leaders never talk about lack of creativity because they never run out of ideas. It's always just nowhere to find them. Just like I presented you, I saw the impact that I wanted to make on people in my organization to make sure they're protected from this, you know, coronavirus. So, of course, I made a big investment in putting together a man mail and getting all the information to make sure they were treating themselves right. But I saw that other opportunity that was there. It's always about being creative, right? That if I could just tap into each one of their individual email banks, imagine all the other people that would like to know what's good advice today for me to protect my immune system. Motivation, success is something they know they have at their fingertips, so we don't need to be motivated. We have self-motivation is inherent. And then money or insufficient support. We tend to, you know, money isn't really a motivator because there's enough money out there. It's everywhere. I look at money as abundance. I tell people money grows on every tree. You just need to figure out how to harvest it because it is true. I mean, we have more billionaires in this world today than you've ever imaginable. I remember when the first billionaire, it was only about 10 years ago, and now we have 21-year-old billionaire. I mean, it's incredible what's going on in our world. So money's everywhere. Just figure out how to harvest it. And you know, it's not about insufficient support. We have plenty of support. We just look around and we create it. Where there's a gap, we create the support system. There are two kinds of pride, both good and bad. Good pride represents our dignity and self-respect, right? We always want to hold ourselves with self-respect. And sometimes when we don't follow along what we know we should do, we kind of burn some of that self-respect. And don't allow that to stand in your way. Just pick yourself up and say, okay, today's a new day. I'm going to make it happen. Today's a new day. I use that a lot. Sometimes I don't have very productive days, and I go, okay, today's a new day. And I get out there and just do it. And our own dignity. And, of course, that comes from living a moral life. We have self-dignity. We believe in ourselves. We look at ourselves in the mirror, and we are not ashamed. We're moving forward. And if you look at yourself in the mirror and you feel shame, then you learn how to put it in your past, because today truly is the first day of the rest of your life. So rejoice and be glad in it. You could always turn that leaf. Don't let your past control your future, right? So never lose awareness of others' contribution and powers. Always, you know, I always give kudos where it belongs. I thank my people. I received a call this morning from one of my leaders in my downline who was just ecstatic about the Saturday training. She said she was giving me kudos. I said, oh, thank you. I appreciate it, but know that it's a team effort. And, you know, there are a lot of us on that Vision 2020 and our presidential mastermind. It's the collaboration that gets it done. You know, so it's just it's just great. It's nice. But I always would rephrase back and say, I just thank you for everything you're doing in the field, right? So you can take a compliment, accept it in a way that's not egotistical, and then pass it back. Find a compliment to pay back, right? Where do these thoughts come from? Separateness, all isolation is self-imposed, right? So if you're isolating yourself from your downline, it's what? Look at a mirror and you'll find out what's causing that. It's you. Or your organization. So we created ourselves, and we don't want to do that. We want to have what? Mutuality. We want to have friendships. We want to always be pouring into people and helping them be better as well as ourselves. And then there's a concept of certainty, right? And in there he says, imagine how much more insufferable a person becomes when they are certain of things, right? If you're certain, you're better than another person. Right? You're not building bridges, you're building walls. They are certain they are tops at what they do. Again, more wall building than bridge building. They're certain they deserve people's admiration. No. Again, the ego gets involved. They are certain that people don't understand them. Again, those thoughts, that whole concept of certainty you want to remove from yourself around those concepts. Don't make judgment calls like that. You cannot maximize your efforts by minimizing other people. wonderful statement. The author says he rarely has met a high performer who thinks they are on top. Most feel like they're just getting started. That's a great. So every time you get to another leadership level in Manitech, go, I've just gotten started. You know, you can spend a day of kudos to yourself for reaching that new leadership level, but now you've just gotten started. If you look at your business in a fresh way, it's amazing what you'll create. And the bottom line here, too, is we all were a mess when we first got started, so never forget that. And I know that so clearly. I remember so well that I struggled for the first 6 months like no tomorrow. I thought I wasn't made for this business. It's not my personality. It doesn't serve me, blah, 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 blah. I went on and on and on. And then I went to a training. I read a book and went to a training. There was one book that made a huge difference in my life. Lid, what, you remember the name of it? The one that they gave? How to Be the Best You Can Be in MLM by Kalich. Yeah, John Kalich. That book totally changed me, as well as going to a training that was done. And I just learned in that training about how people don't care how much I know until they know how much I care, and how I was coming across like the lawyer I was. And that wasn't going to work in this industry. I might work at a negotiating table in Germany when we're trying to buy a multi-billion-dollar company, but it doesn't work when you're out there working with one-on-one with people who you're trying to serve. So it was just a lot more, you know, humility is a foundational virtue that enables many other virtues to grow. That's a great quote for a lot of us to put on our boards. So here's five ways to develop. Let me give you this. It's not actually in the outline. Five ways to develop a more open mindset. Number one, deliberately seek others' ideas for improving anything you do. And I always do that. In fact, even on the Saturday morning call, we got such great feedback. But I was like, okay, how can we do this better? Because, see, we're going to do it every single Saturday as a group of presidentials, so we want to make sure we do it the best to meet the field's need. So I'm always looking for suggestions. I love feedback. Fall in love with feedback to improve things. Number two, hire a coach or a trainer. In other words, have somebody coach you. And in our industry, we don't have to do that. We have people above us that are very interested in our success, so work with them. Get them to do weekly coaching or mentoring with you. And the other thing we do is you get on calls. Like, you know, the three calls that exist on Monday are terrific, whether it's the Thurisons or Wendy Kramer's and Amanda Luttrell's the Roys. The Roys are on that one. That's a great one, too. Or Mary Jo's. These are great chances for you to grow, right? And you can look at that as coaching and training. Number three, remind yourself that trust is earned through caring for others, not bragging about yourself. He brought that up. Trust is earned by caring for other people. Same as how we go out there and share Manitech. It's not about bragging about ourselves. It's about truly caring for other people. And four is take ownership of your actions by reflecting on what role you played. In other words, don't point fingers at anyone else. What role did I play in that miscommunication or in a misunderstanding? And that's what you can correct. You don't worry about other people. Look at yourself. Take ownership of your own actions. And then five, always remind yourself of gratitude, coming from gratitude. Just like my call. I love people that are on these calls because I'm grateful that you're here. It gives me, excites me, it allows me to be the best I can be because I love teaching and training. All right, next in the beware of dissatisfaction. This is another one of those things that trip people up, right? They'll cause you to fall, is dissatisfaction. So the first one was superiority. The second is dissatisfaction. A lot of us can look at ourselves and our business. And, first, with Marcus Aurelius' quote was great. Be satisfied with success in even the smallest matter and think that even such a result is no trifle. It's a great quote. Even in the smallest matter, be satisfied with success. A lot of us get, you know, we've set goals about where we're going to be in a certain series of months and all these kinds of things, and we don't hit them. What do? We take out the hammer and start beating ourselves up. Beware of that. High performers tend to be more satisfied. What does that mean? They look for the positives in any result that's created. So we can always take a negative and make it into a positive. So something fell apart. So what can we look at that's that's good about that? What did we learn? And I learned this lesson only so well when I left Milwaukee and moved down to San Antonio, Texas, and bought a company, a turnaround, with a partner. And within a year, we had filed for bankruptcy to try to get protection for the creditors in this turnaround, and then we had a labor strike. So there was no out except one thing, to shutter the doors. And after working 16, 18-hour days for months on end trying to turn this thing around, it was almost a little bit of relief to me, but it really was so sad because I made the failure of that business mean I was a failure, right? And I remember being so depressed about it and down in the dumps, liquidated the company to get the bank paid off. And then I got a phone call from my uncle, and my uncle said, Mary Jo, you are not a failure. And he went, it was just great. He said, you know how many businesses fail every single year? Every single day, like 1,497 or some number like that. He told me, fail every single day in the United States of America. And not that that gave me any relief, but it made me feel like I wasn't alone out there, because a lot of times we feel like we're alone. We feel like we've been branded, right? And then he went through, the only time you fail at a business is when you fail to learn from what just transpired. In other words, what are the lessons here to learn? And it was brilliant advice. Of course, he was a brilliant businessman himself. And it was incredible because it just totally converted my spirit. Well, same for us. Whether a person doesn't get started with you or you have a blip in your business, it's not about beating yourself up. It's like, okay, what can I learn from this? Successful people work on the basis of how do I grow and what can I learn? How do I grow? What do I learn? They don't wallow in a quote-unquote viewed failure. Every failure is just another step towards your success. So don't be dissatisfied. Yep. And satisfaction accompanies what? Striving for optimal performance. If you live your life never being satisfied, you're never going to be at peace. You're going to be miserable. I choose joy. So no matter where my business is today, guess what? I'm joyful because I know I can be better, and I just have more work to be done, and it's a place of joy. So always room to improve. So when you take on this dissatisfaction, you're going to be so stressed out, and you're going to destroy your environment. Besides, you hurt your health. It's not worth it. Is it, I don't know, you look at yourself today and say, is it better for me to be joyful or be to be miserable? Hello? It's a choice. So relieve yourself from that anxiety. Our normal tendency is to seek positive emotions and experiences. This enhances our learning and our ability for new opportunities. Absolutely. It's like fertilizer. When we come from a concept of positive emotions and experiences, it like fertilizes us. It causes our emotions to be exhilarant. We're more positive, and positive energy is what brings positive results. Some leaders say never be satisfied as a mantra, and it's ridiculous. They do that because they always want to get something better, and that's not what it's about. Being satisfied doesn't mean you stop. It just means, wow, that was terrific, great results. Now, let's move forward and create some other great results. Notice the difference. We love the results we created. That was a great marketing idea. That was a great concept. Now, what do we do next? What's our next step? So it's not about sitting there and saying, I'm dissatisfied, or you should never be satisfied. Seeking excellence and experiencing satisfaction are not mutually exclusive concepts, right? So seek to be satisfied and just keep on trying to make everything better. To be satisfied striver rather than a dissatisfied curmudgeon. I like that quote. Be a satisfied striver rather than a dissatisfied curmudgeon. Yeah, amen to that, right? And if you're out there, especially when you're in a business like ours, what happens is when you're dissatisfied, you're going to be negative, and you're going to go out there and you're going to try to attract people to your business when you're negative because you're discouraged from being dissatisfied. That makes no sense to me. Everything could be going down the tubes, and you can go out there and go, I love my business. I think you'd really find this great. I can't wait to share this opportunity with you and talk about the products. And you can just be as positive as all get out, because it's where you're going, where your eyes keep your eyes on the prize. So some of the things he suggested to help you on this journey so you keep stay out of dissatisfaction is start journaling at the end of each day. Write down three things that went well and write about those blessings. Number two, get your group together once a week to talk about what is working. What is working? Everybody throw in their ideas. What worked for you today? What worked for you today? That's why today I kicked off with telling you some things that worked in our business, right? What's working? You want to talk about what's working. And then start the meetings by asking others to share one great thing that has happened to give the team a sense of joy, pride, and fulfillment. One great thing. All right. The third thing you talked about, the third beware, okay, so what did we talk about? We talked about, just got done with beware of satisfaction. We started with beware of superiority, ego, allowing that to get way out of line. And now beware of neglect. This one is huge, too. It's about keeping balance. If things are not going well with you, begin your effort at correcting the situation by carefully examining the service you are rendering and especially the spirit in which you are rendering it. So focus on us. Who can I control? Myself. I have 100% control of my own attitude, my own behavior, everything that happens to me. I'm in control. And acknowledging that, how do I want to live my life? And one of the places where we tend to get neglect when we get so caught up in a brand new business and we have to make it work is we tend to neglect like people and other people, and we fall into that. It's like the other traps. Like neglect is like the others, like dissatisfaction and superiority. It just kind of creeps up on you. It just starts showing up, and you want to quash it like a bug. You don't say you're going to neglect family, friends, faith, other obligation, but the business sometimes blinds you. So you have to start looking, where is that balance in my life? So it's not, I liked it, the other thing he said, it's not what you do that unseats you from success, but what you don't do. So make sure that balance exists in your life, that you're not neglecting things, and that's not just neglecting outside things like your family and your friendships and your faith and your other obligations that you have in life. It's also about neglecting what? Doing the things you know that you need to do to make the business work, right? A lot of people go, but I hadn't realized it was so bad until. Don't let you get to the point where you're saying until. I didn't realize it was so bad until. Because now, what does it mean? You've severely damaged something in your life. And some of those marks of damage are really hard to erase. They're hard to get rid of, and some people never do. I've seen people bust up marriages because of business, because they got so focused that they lost any kind of concept of being involved in a marriage. It's horrible. Or the children pay a price, or their faith, or other, you know, their other family members. It's not worth it, people. Most neglect can be categorized in two areas, obliviousness and overreaching. So obliviousness means that you get so focused on one area that you're completely unaware of the growing problems elsewhere. So let's see, are we ignoring our leaders in our field? How many contacts do you have with them on a weekly basis? Are you getting so focused only on a brand new associate that just signed up in your organization that you left everything by the wayside? And everybody else feels like they're nothing compared to this new person, business builder you just signed up. Are you focusing only on like getting so caught up in social media campaigns at the loss of all other things? There are lots of ways of sharing this. I just did it at my church yesterday. I did it with a gal on the phone the other day. I went over to a woman's house. How old was our woman yesterday? 83 or something? 83 years old. I went over to her house. And we walked out with, and she was already signed up, is that right? And ordering Immunostart or something. No, Plus. Plus and Firm were the two products she was ordering. And we walked out with a $400 automatic order. Yeah, it's about going into people's lives. But so you keep an eye on what's important is building those relationships and being kind and reaching out to people. So if you don't keep an eye on the new stuff, and you allow all the seepage, if you keep an eye just on the new stuff, and you're going to allow all the seepage that occur on the back end. And you have to be very careful with that. So keep the support system going for all the people in your business. Burchard asks people to organize their lives in 10 different categories. This is not a bad exercise to have, right? And look at each one of the ones he lists: health, family, friends, intimate relationship, mission, finances, adventure, hobby, spirituality, and emotion. And then test your happiness in each, giving each a ranking of 1 to 10. 1 is no happiness. 10 is abundance of happiness, right? And you can just do this, draft up a sheet and do this like every 3 months or so and see, so that you have an awareness of where you might be falling off. Not a bad thing to do, especially when you get into a business like ours. You become an entrepreneur, you start your own business, and you go out there and you get so focused on making it work and accomplishing things and that others around you are paying a price. And I don't know that you want to pay that price, because the price is going to be paid by you when you lose those people in your life, when you neglect, right? So the other thing is overreaching. So one is that we get so bloody busy and focused on how success is going to drive us that we leave everybody else behind. The other is overreaching. In other words, what happens to the top performers is that the top performers are really disciplined in setting priorities, so what to focus on. People who aren't of that ilk tend to overreach. They look at everything. They just grab more and more on their platter. Lydia looks at me and she's laughing a little bit because she goes, Mary Jo, you're a classic overreacher. And I do that, but I also tend to work from, 7 in the morning until like 10 at night, and working on different projects. When I add new projects or new business concepts in my life, I just add more hours of doing more business. So I do overreach a little bit, but I also realize my husband's retiring in another month, so I'm going to be spending a lot more time with that. So I'm trying to get some of these things off the ground and up and running in the meantime. But it's kind of top performance do tend to overreach. There's no question. But when you overreach, what happens is your performance falls off. It is about going for too much, too fast in too many domains. How does that line with your life? Look at your own life and say, where is that happening to me today? Do you feel that way perhaps in all options of prospecting? Sometimes we chase 10 different ways of prospecting and we're not being effective in any of them. So what we want to do is slow down, be more strategic, and say no more often. And what does that mean? We're playing the long game, not the short game. It's not about what happens by the end of the week. It's what happens by the end of the year and the end of 5 years and the end of 10 years. So play the long game. So take time to care about what your schedule looks like, right? Every morning I sit down and I look at my schedule. We talk about what's to be accomplished today and we get it set in stone. And if there are things that need to be released, we release them. And then finally, in his book, he talks about the number one thing. At the end of his book, he said, what is the number one thing? If I said, what is the number one thing? Some of you would go, well, Mary Jo, I don't know. What is the number one thing? About high performance people? What's high performance habits, high performance people? What's the number one thing? And as Virgil, he used that quote, they are able who think they are able. They are able who think they are able. You follow? In other words, it's your confidence. They've measured over 100 variables in search of what habits matter most to high performance. And after the massive study, there's no factor more important than self-confidence. The more confidence, the greater clarity, energy, productivity, influence, necessity, and courage. You're willing to say no and more sure of what to focus on. And here's a quote right out of the book. Becoming more confident is good for your health. It decreases burnout. It makes you feel happy, willing to take on new challenges, and more fulfilled. For these reasons, I like to say that nothing correlates with confidence. So some of you are going, well, Mary Jo, where does that level of confidence come from? Well, first of all, it's about building a skill set, right? I mean, the more we get skilled at certain things, the more confident we are. So it's not about dismissing like the four core activities in our business. You want to make sure that you have that down. That's going to increase your confidence. So people, it's about our thinking. We think about things that give us more confidence. So we focus our thoughts on things that make us feel more confident, not things that rob us. Then it's about activity. Do things that often gave them more confidence. What are things that make you more confident? And those are the actions you should be taking. That helps build self-confidence. And then the third concept is avoidance, avoiding things that drain your confidence. So some of us are keen on starting new things all the time. Well, every time you start a new project, you feel a lack of confidence because you don't know what you're doing in it yet. And it's not that we shouldn't start new things, but when you start loading yourself with five new things, you're going to just burn out. You're going to get discouraged. You're not going to feel like you're capable. Those kind of feelings will never serve you in your business. What you want to do is always do things that help support your confidence and strive to be better. Strive to be better. He said in the book, he talks about the three C's of confidence, okay? Three C's of confidence. Develop competency, belief in one's abilities to do a specific task. So you look at the core activities in your business and you rank yourself. Now, over the weekend, you had an opportunity to be on that Saturday training, and those are now posted in the library and will be put on the, what page are they putting on? Tuesday? No.
It's all about Manatech.
All about Manatech. So you can go and look at that, and you can say, do I have the capacity to do that kind of presentation? Build that C for confidence. If not, then watch it a few times and maybe develop your own style a little bit because you want to be you. You don't want to be Don or you don't want to be Mary Jo. You want to be you. But you're going to have all those slides and you're going to have the ability to do that for yourself. So it's about, and some of you go, well, I never want to do that. Well, then you're choosing not to really do the business, but you can still, even in the meantime, while you're not developing that skill set, you can use those links to send out to people and just build a beautiful email or text message that will incentivize them. I had an interaction last week with somebody that truly, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have created the same results. And I was able to sit back and put myself in her shoes. How do I think she's feeling? What do I think will best motivate her to move forward? Instead of thinking about my response to her, I thought about how I could best relate to her. What's her personality quadrant, and how's the... And you know what? She wrote me back over the weekend, said, let's get together, and she was so excited. But it was because I took the extra time to be competent in my ability to relate to her where she's coming from, not where Mary Jo's coming from. So develop competency. Build the skill sets. Work at trying to be your best. Put a standard out there. Now, that doesn't mean that we beat up on ourselves and we're not our best, because trust me, I look at myself and I'm fighting to be my best at everything I do, but the best is an ever-evasive label for me. It's like, I know I can always be better, but I don't beat up on myself. I just go, it's a challenge for me, and I love that challenge. If you're sitting there going, oh, Mary Jo, but when I don't think I'm doing my best, I just get the hammer out, and I go, stop it. Give yourself tons of credit for where you are and just build on it. Keep working on yourself. High performers are learners, and they believe that they can learn what is necessary to win in the future, gives them as much confidence as their current skill sets. You get that? That's where it comes from. Their belief that they can learn what is necessary to win in the future gives them as much confidence as their current skill sets. Write that down. Put that somewhere in your room so you can stand in that. Brendan thought for sure high performers would first talk about character traits, not competency. This idea of competency came from what? The high performance. They didn't talk about their character traits. They talked about competency levels. High performers ponder the lessons from their wins. They give credit to themselves, and they allow those wins to integrate into their psyche and give them greater strength. So we know what that's like. How many of you, when you get somebody new in your business, you're just exhilarant. You get really excited about that new person. And that's why it's almost like a drug for some of us. It's like so exciting because we see that this person's now on a new path with their business or their health, and we were part of that process. So why does that not instill in us a desire to do that every day, every week, every month? Because we lost the feel for that? Because we don't have confidence that we can do that again? If you did it once, you can do it again. It just maybe tweak, do a few tweaks, talk to your mentor and add a few things and go out there and keep on working on it. Okay, so develop a competency level. 2, be congruent. Self-trust is the first secret of success. right? To feel and be more congruent, we have to be more aware, you know, conscious in crafting and maintaining our identity. Who am I? What's most important to me? Who am I as a person? So you need to start looking at how I'm really living our life, right, my life, and not just imagining it. So there are five questions that came out of the book that I wrote in the outline. Am I being honest with who I am? Answer these questions and then figure out what is honest with who I am. Am I trustworthy, true to myself and others? Do I practice what I think and preach? Or do I have some falsehoods there? Am I living a false story? Like some people are out there and they're going, oh man, these are the best products in the world, blah, 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 and they're not even ordering them. Are you kidding? Do you get this incongruity there? That's going to kill you. Do I follow through on what I know of myself? Do I take a stand when the world challenges who I can become? I can do anything. Great mantra. You see, successful performers shape their identity by conscious will and have aligned their thoughts, feelings, and behaviors to support that identity. But there has to be that congruence, right? You know, how am I living my life? Is it congruent with who I am? Is it congruent with where I'm going? Is it congruent with what I want to create? And then finally, enjoy connecting. You can make more friends in 2 months by becoming interested in other people than you can in 2 years by trying to get other people interested in you. Is that great? That kind of falls in alignment a little bit with the saying, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. You follow? Very similar concepts here. This one came from Dale Carnegie. So you want to always be in the room asking questions, finding out about other people. And some of you go, well, Mary Jo, I'm just not that interested. I said, be interested. Force yourself. You know, habits are formed by us forcing to do certain things, and all of a sudden it becomes natural. So even if you find yourself at a level of disinterest, be interested. Force yourself to do it. And you'll be amazed. It's one of the exercises I love telling new people to do. Go out to wherever you're going, and I want you to meet 2 new people, and I want you to find out 10 things about those new people. Give people that assignment. It'll blow them away. Because if they don't get in the habit of being interested in other people, they're not going to do very well in life. Notice, this isn't just about the business we're in. This is about every business. This is about successful people, high-performance people. So we want to be interested in people, right? Yeah, so build that identity. High performers love to develop influence with others. One of the hottest words out there today is become an influencer. You've heard it 101 times, I'm sure. Become an influencer. That's what you want to do. We've been talking about that for years, but now it's a hot little phrase. This does not mean they are all extroverts. In fact, a recent study of over 900 CEOs found that just over half were introverts. Hello? A lot of us have a perception that those top successful people in businesses are all extroverts. Wrong. They're introverts, the majority. So it doesn't take an extrovert to be successful in business by any stretch of your imagination, including our business. It just takes a heart to care and be interested instead of always trying to be the center of attention. And see, extroverts tend to like that center of attention, don't they? Yeah. So they all have realized the tremendous value in relating to others. Through connecting with others, we learn more about the world and also about ourselves. So that's it, people. 3 weeks on High Performance Habits book. I hope you enjoyed it. Everybody, feedback? Did we learn something? Maybe some things we need to work on ourselves about, some things we need to be more conscious of, right? I think that's what this book did for me. It just brought me to a higher level of consciousness about how I need to behave and how I need to be more determined and more disciplined in my day in and day out life. I know as entrepreneurs sometimes we love the idea that we work for ourselves so we can do whatever we want, but the problem with that is that we do whatever we want instead of what we need to be doing. So it's about refocusing our energies and putting, you know, some structure in our lives and some discipline in our lives to have that happen. and getting out there and being interested in people everywhere we go. All right, any comments before I leave?
Mary Jo, this is Joellen. I would love to have this book as a bare bones training for onboarding business builders once they reach that regional level. You know,
very good idea. Yeah, very good idea. I will pass that on. I'll talk to Al about that because we could actually build like a four-week course on this easily, right? I mean,
exactly.
And make it. Yeah, yeah. I love the idea. It is the content.
Some companies put ranking up. They add a little, not just the volume amount, but that you have to complete a certain class before you can go up to the next level. And I know that hinges on, are you an employee? Are you an independent? But I really think if people had some of this leadership kind of training and self-development training when they reach that level, it would elevate the company much, much
faster,
more quickly.
Absolutely. And that's a goal. I think they're working with Sona on that to try to build some self-development steps along the pathway for different, based on leadership levels, right? I think that, absolutely. And this book, it's resounding. I mean, it really is that good. Yeah, thanks for the suggestion. I'll pass it on.
Thank you. It was a great overview of it, too. You did a great job. Really
thanks. Good. Anyone else? Okay, everybody, 11 o'clock CDT, time to kick off and go build your business and be the leader with those new high-performance habits. Yes.
Hi, this is Martha. You said you had started out in this business and you didn't do well, and the book, How to Be the Best You Can Be in Network Marketing, helped you, plus a training, some training. Was that the Clemmer training, perhaps?
No, well, Clemmer absolutely helped me, but that I didn't do the Clemmer training for a couple of years. I was already a presidential director before I started the Clemmer training. Does that make sense? Training that was done by Dr. Nisi Moore, if some of you remember her. She had like just a business training kind of thing that was more about beingness than it was about, you know, step-by-step how to do the business. And that was at Suzanne Kemp's house. And I'll distinctly remember it because that's where I heard the things like, people don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. I'd never heard that statement before. So
her name is Nisi Moore?
Dr. Nisi Moore, but she's no longer, she's not been associated with Manatech for years. But, the Clemmer work is, I mean, by far had the greatest impact on me in terms of self-development. For sure.
Is Nisi Moore's training available anywhere? Anymore?
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't know that was taped or anything. I can look. Would you like me to dig out and see what I have? I can maybe look, but I don't know that it was ever taped. No.
Yes.
You know, Mary Jo, this is Joellen, and the other training that was so great was the Master Associate training that we used to get. Remember
mm-hmm.
that training when you first started? That was where I first heard that, and Nisi Moore was one of the trainers. But
and
I
maybe
had,
that's what she was doing that day. Master Associate training.
I think that was the Master Associate training included all that, which was the bare bones. You know, it was a good 4-hour, a 5-hour training. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah.
And we had certificates at the time, which unfortunately were misused, but it was a great idea.
But I think the Master Associate training that covered everything, though. It had a segment on products, a segment on the comp plan, right? Didn't it cover... I remember that.
4 hours just of it. Did about 4 hours of personal development on how to talk to people and all that.
Yep.
It was really very well done for people getting started in the business.
And so necessary. And you know how easy today it is with all the Zooms and with all the. I mean, you could build that out so simply. Really, different segments people go through. Mm-hmm. So good. I will. I'll add that to our list to do list. Thank you guys for the feedback.
Thank you, and thank you.
And most of my issues, people, you know, most of you don't have the problems I have, because, you know, my path was so dramatic, being a lawyer and the vice presidential counsel of a billion-dollar company. And I mean, I was on this huge at 28 years old, you know, so I had all this background, and then putting me into, okay, go out there and talk to people about gay, and I was like, okay. I mean, I was like definitely the fish out of water, and I really didn't have a clue how to interact except come from total logic, You know, so I would just relate to people like, well, you obviously need this, so why wouldn't you take it? Like, are you stupid or something? You know, we probably didn't say that per se. But, I mean, that's the attitude I had towards people. And that doesn't work if you have it. Right? So I had to shift and state, which he talks about, you know, the humility of just being able to never lose contact with people and be generous and be a great listener and all these traits. I just had to come out. And it was further on in my career, you know, I became presidential director in 2 years, so it was probably reasonably right after that that I started the Clemmer work, and I spent 2-3 years doing Clemmer work. Yeah.
And then
anything else? Okay, everybody, have a great day. Go out there and make a difference in people's lives. They're all waiting to hear from you. I know that for a fact, especially in our times right now. All right, have a great week. We'll talk to you next Monday. Bye, everyone.
Go later. Just sitting there.